Today's program has been brought to you by TechServe, New York's original and still the best Apple computer, iPod, and iPhone store and repair shop. For more information, visit TechServe.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Listening to You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Helen Holliman, and I'm back for another week of radio in Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And today I'm joined by Mark Andrew Gravel, author of the forthcoming cookbook, Kill the Recipe, a visual guidebook on the basics of radical bean making and plant-based eating.
That's it.
Is that the whole shebang? Yeah, I got every last.
Indeed.
You're a man of many things, though. You're a designer, a chef. You do a lot of great stuff. So, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, beans are pretty much the main topic today.
Beans are it.
Beans are the musical fruit. So, tell me about Kill the Recipe. How did this project come about?
Kill the Recipe kind of grew out of some of my ideas that the way we eat and our food system is kind of like out of balance. And, you know, people should be cooking more at home, and, you know, people are strapped for time. And although beans aren't really like the most obvious thing that it seems like would be quick to make, like once you make one pot, you have a lot of beans to work with to make really quick meals after you already make that pot. So they are actually, they turn into a sort of a healthy convenience food. So this book is kind of just like a proposal for kind of changing the way we think about cooking and eating at home.
So you started something called Good Farm Movement.
Mm-hmm.
How did this come about, and what is it that you're doing?
Good Farm Movement came about. It was one of my first projects. It was a art and agriculture blog that kind of just showcased what I call the agrarian avant-garde. And it's like all the amazing farmers, chefs, food artisans, educators, activists who were kind of creatively engaging people with food system issues and, you know, using art and, you know, design and, you know, film, video, photography, graphic design, any like really storytelling medium outside of the written word. I just wanted to have a very visual education kind of experience where people could come and engage with what was happening in our food system and, you know, showcase all the people that were doing really amazing things and trying to help get their stories out there.
Give me some examples of some of those farms or people within this movement that you are really psyched about, and what are they doing?
One of the first organizations that I was involved with, called the Greenhorns, they're really rad. They, you know, are doing a lot for the young farmers cause and beginning farmers, trying to, you know, get the word out there that farmers are needed and that farming can be a viable profession and it is very rewarding. I mean, they're not sugarcoating anything really. Like, it is tough work, but it is an alternative in terms of a profession if you don't want to like have the traditional 9-to-5. They're just like out there telling the stories of young farmers, trying to entice people that might be, you know, on the fence about wanting to get into farming, trying to entice them to cross over and join them on the land.
Yeah, no, totally. And I mean, it's amazing to see so many young people are becoming farmers. And mm-hmm. What are some of the farms that you love?
Farms that I love. I love my friends at Brooklyn Grange. They're the rooftop farmers in Long Island City, and now with their second roof on the Navy Yards. They're great. Annie Novak's really great with Eagle Street. I mean, granted, you know, it's not your traditional farm, but the quality of what they're growing up there really speaks to, you know, how skilled they are. And yeah, their food's amazing. I love working with them.
Tell me about growing up. You're a Southern gentleman. How did you get into the food world and the art world, and what kind of brought you to New York?
All right. Growing up, I had a really amazing grandmother, and who was an incredible cook. And then my mom is also a fantastic cook. So I was just always in the kitchen with them and just, you know, helping out wherever I could. And we spent every summer in Maryland with my grandparents, and, you know, farm stands were a big part of our meals up there. Or I guess we're in New York now, so down there. So yeah, we just always had really amazing fresh food on the table. You know, Maryland blue crabs, like everything was just really fresh. And so I just became kind of fascinated with food. I was a really big eater when I was younger. I loved to eat, still do. And I wasn't very picky, so I was just like interested in everything. So yeah, so I guess my mom saw my interest in food and started sending me to these like kids cooking classes when I was super young. I think I was like 7 or 8.
Wow.
Yeah, we were making like crepes and gingerbread houses and soups and stuff
advanced.
Like that. Yeah, you know, I guess for that age, it's like you're taking a little bit of risk putting kids in the kitchen with flaming hot crepe pans. But anyway, so yeah, that just kind of, as I got older, I was working in really cool like restaurants when I was in high school. And as I got into college, I couldn't really like nail down what I was interested in. And I was like, I'm just going to give this food thing a shot. So I dropped out, went to culinary school, like loved it, absolutely loved it. Charleston, which is where I went to culinary school, was such an incredible town to really learn about food and cook food, because they have such amazing farmers down there, like fresh seafood. And just like the culinary traditions of the Low Country go back so far, and it's so multicultural with like the influences of like the African influence, the European influence, the Native American influence. So it's just like, it's really fresh. It's not your typical Southern food. There's not too much fried food involved or anything like that. So I just became like more stoked on cooking every day down there. And then when I finished culinary school, I had the opportunity to do the food studies program at NYU. And I'd always been like interested in graphic design and been doing some things on the side, just like as a hobby, kind of self-taught. And when I was at NYU, it's very like individualized study, so I decided to focus on food and design. And that's kind of how I got to the point where I am today in terms of doing a lot of the design, like food related design work that I've been involved with.
You also lived in San Francisco at a certain point, and you know, without creating too much controversy since we are in Brooklyn, what's your favorite culinary city that you've lived in thus far?
With all due respect to Brooklyn and San Francisco, Charleston, South Carolina.
That's a good answer. Yeah. Where should I eat in Charleston right now?
You should go to Martha Lou's. It is the epitome of the small, old school soul food shack. It's this amazing little pink house on the side of the road as you leave downtown Charleston. And they have like the most incredible lima beans I've ever had in my life. I was freaking out when I ate them. They're so good. And then, you know, they just have like, it's just a kind of a traditional meat and three place. But like, if you want a true Charleston experience, like real deal Low Country food, go to Martha Lou's.
Is there anything from the South that you miss that you can't get here? Like, for example, I lived in New Orleans for a really long time, and I constantly kind of quote-unquote import Crystal hot sauce or Louisiana hot sauce, Camellia red beans, just certain things that you cannot get. What is an item that you put in your suitcase when you come back here?
Cowpeas. I actually brought some. Heirloom cowpeas.
Wow.
That's what I miss, because these make the most amazing Hoppin' John. These are kind of like the original black-eyed peas. And their taste is just superior to anything that I've ever had that's like in the field pea family. So I generally have these in my suitcase. When I came up to do a dinner here in May in Brooklyn, I hadn't moved back to Brooklyn yet, so I literally put 12 pounds of these in my suitcase and brought them on the airplane. And then these are just hard to find. You can't really find these here, so I just have them mailed up to me now. These cow peas would be the perfect example of something that I miss.
So, speaking of beans, tell me about, give me the rundown on your favorite beans.
My favorite beans, well, the cow peas for sure. I really like chickpeas because they're so versatile. They're just really good. Fresh favas, fresh shelling beans, those are amazing. It's like any time you can get beans when they're in season and they're fresh, it's just like, it's unbelievable. You have to work for it, but it's totally worth it. I like black beans just because, like, those were the first beans that I really like stepped out into public with, as far as like taking my bean cooking on the road. I would just like show up and make these awesome black beans. I don't really discriminate. I do have my favorites, but those are a few of them. I encourage anybody just to really get out there and try whatever you can get your hands on, because there's so many different varieties. It's like, I feel like you'll never ever be able to taste all the beans that are grown and that exist out there.
When we get back from the break, we're gonna try. You brought some beans.
I did.
What did you bring?
I brought some Peruvian beans, aka Mexican yellow beans, aka canary beans. Yeah, a good friend gave these beans to me, and I just simmered them really simply with some chili de arbol, shallot, garlic, salt, and they turned out really nice.
They look
very
great.
Delicious, creamy texture. The broth actually is like almost tastes like a very rich chicken stock, but it's that whole thing is actually totally vegan.
Wow, crazy. Yeah. Well, we're gonna definitely get into Kill the Recipe. We're gonna talk a lot about beans more and more and more, and where art and beans collide. And so stay tuned, keep it locked. You're listening to You Look Hungry. We'll be right back. Without a thought, those organisms were. In time.
Man, Joe, your computer is so slow, I can't even use this thing.
Yeah, I should probably get a new one. Do you have any suggestions?
Oh, totally, man. You should go to TechServe.
Okay, what's so good about TechServe?
Well, they've got this awesome new insider program that's free when you get a new Mac with AppleCare. So you should buy your computer there because you get 50% off data transfer, free loaner computers, front-of-the-line repair privileges, an annual Mac tune-up service, backup consultation and setup, seminars, and much more.
Okay, yeah, where's TechServe?
It's at 119 West 23rd Street in New York City. They're New York's premier authorized Apple reseller and service provider, and you should totally check out TechServe.com for more information.
All right, that settles it. I'm headed to TechServe.
If you're just tuning in, you were listening to You Look Hungry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm still your host, Helen Holliman, and I'm joined today by Mark Andrew Gravel, author of the forthcoming cookbook, Kill the Recipe, a visual guidebook on the basics of radical bean making and plant-based eating. Before we get back into it, you should probably go to killtherecipe.com. You can get a little sneak peek preview. It's pretty beautiful.
Preview it online, and I snuck a link up there to purchase it as well, even though it hasn't officially been released yet.
It's pretty awesome. The visuals are off the chain. We were just discussing the illustrator. Tell me a little bit about who she is.
Lucy Engelman, illustrator extraordinaire. She is from Northfield, Illinois. Just outside of Chicago. She went to the University of Michigan, and when she got in touch with me, she was just finishing school, and she literally just, this email from her just appeared out of thin air, and it couldn't have been more timely, because I was to the point with the book where I was looking for illustrators, and she emailed me and was like, hey, I really like what you're up to. If you ever need any illustrations, let me know. And so I definitely took her up on her offer. I think she wasn't quite sure what she was getting into at first. We wound up working together almost a year on the her illustrating the book and our back and forth. So she's really amazing. Her portfolio is at lucyengelman.com, so you should check her out. She's amazing.
It's beautiful. I want it to be wallpaper.
Yeah.
In my house.
Yeah, she just has such a good style. I mean, it was almost like too good to be true when I was looking at her portfolio, because I was like, this is like, this illustration style is the perfect like juxtaposition to this very assertive title. You know, so it kind of brings everything together in a really nice, really nice book.
All right, so you made some beans. They
did
look insanely awesome.
They turned out good.
Let's make our listeners sad that they can't eat this, and let's eat it on air.
Okay,
what did you make? Tell me.
So what we're about to eat are these Peruvian beans, and I just simmered them with garlic, shallot, chili de arbol, which is this really nice, it was dried chili, olive oil and salt. And so basically what I did was I soaked these beans in well salted water overnight, and then added the garlic and shallot and olive oil and simmered them until they were done. And now they've probably been, it's been about a day and a half, so they've had time to like really bathe in that amazing broth, and really they're super flavorful.
These are the most delicious beans I've ever had. I'm not just saying that, they are really crazy delicious. Everyone should eat them at some time. So all right, speaking of beans, let's talk, give me the rundown on the book. Why, you know, you have been quoted as saying beans are culture. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
The whole beans are culture thing is just kind of like a way to convey that beans are so culturally and biologically diverse. You know, they have their place on the table, like, all over the world. You know, beans are familiar to just about every culture out there. And so, and they're just, like, such a humble representation of, like, the place and people. And so, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much in a nutshell why I say beans are culture, because they are, how they're prepared, you know, what the actual variety is. Like, it's a very pure expression of culture, of a food culture.
You are not a vegetarian.
I'm not a vegetarian, no. But I do have a book that's about beans and plant-based eating. So I'll do a little explaining.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, so I just, I mean, Kill the Recipe is kind of like, it can mean two things. Like, literally, Kill the Recipe is, in the book, there's all how-tos, so there's no recipes. It's just kind of like, you know, a bean, choose your own adventure. I just give you the template or the framework to make a really awesome bean dish, and you can just fill in the ingredients with whatever you have. And, you know, on the other side, like, Kill the Recipe is kind of a metaphor, like, thinking of our food system as a recipe and, like, you know, trying to change how we're operating in our food system. Like, right now, it's so out of balance, I feel like, with all the, you know, industrial production of meat and stuff like that. So, getting back to, like, the meat, and the meat or not eating meat, it's kind of like, just, it shows you how to use meat more of, like, as a seasoning or as a condiment, like, thinking about it, you know, as a way to complement the meal, not necessarily be the focus of the meal. So that's why, you know, Kill the Recipe doesn't really have a perspective in terms of eating meat or not eating meat. It's just encouraging you to, you know, eat more beans and subsequently eat more vegetables, but also enjoy meat. Just enjoy better quality, and if you can, and less of it, because, you know, we don't really need that much meat to get by.
One of the coolest tricks that you have in here, I hope I can give it away, mm-hmm. even though yeah. it's not out yet, is
absolutely
canned beans.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about your amazing trick, because I never knew about this, and now it's kind of changed my life a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm hoping it will do for a lot of people. It's kind of like the gateway bean how-to. if you're kind of like overwhelmed about the whole idea of soaking beans and then simmering them for, you know, an hour or so, this is kind of like a quick fix, like if you want to make like a bean dish on a weeknight, which is why they're called weeknight beans. Yeah, you just, you know, take canned beans and you boil them basically like pasta. You know, you season your water with salt, splash of olive oil, clove of garlic is good, some chili flakes if you have them. And yeah, you just bring them to like a ripping boil. And depending on what you're going to make, you know, if you're going to make a salad, you only want to boil them for like 5 minutes or so. If you're going to make something like hot, like soup or stew or a casserole, boil them a little longer. But it basically just, you know, kind of neutralizes that canned taste and like seasons them and just makes them, you know, really good. And it's a pretty good substitute if you don't have time to just make an actual big pot.
Where do you pull inspiration for cooking as well as art and design?
Oh man, a lot of my inspiration comes from kind of like the coast. I love the beach. I love riding waves. I do a lot of my best thinking when I'm in the ocean. So a lot of my inspiration comes in that sort of natural environment. And I also draw a huge amount of inspiration just walking around the streets. I've always been super into street art, which is why there's a photo of a tag in the beginning of the book that says, "Eat your veggies." So yeah, I mean, it's this weird kind of balance between like nature and then the urban environment, and I love them both for different reasons, and they both have, you know, different roles in my life, but they're both huge sources of inspiration for me.
Amazing. Wait, so you surf?
I boogie board.
Oh, all right. What are you eating after a like rip it up boogie boarding session?
Yeah. Generally, like my favorite thing to eat is after that, because I'm so famished, is just rice and beans with like fried eggs on top. You know, just actually taking the rice and beans and almost like refrying them up together. There's this traditional dish in Costa Rica called gallo pinto, and it's rice and beans fried with like leeks, and it's almost like fried rice with beans in it. So yeah, it's really good. It's very like satisfying. It fills you up and you feel totally re-energized, but not like lethargic. Like, you don't necessarily want to go like take a nap for 2 hours. You just feel replenished.
What's your favorite country in the universe that makes the best beans?
I mean, I think Italy.
Really?
Yeah. Probably because one of the best chickpea dishes I've ever had in my life was in Rome. And I just was on like a bean scavenger hunt when I was over there, just trying to find like the best beans to eat at every restaurant. Yeah, my friends thought it was a little weird, but because all I was like doing was seeking out beans. I was basically looking for the best beans and lots of good street art when I was over there. That was like the focus of my trip. And Rome happens to have both of those. They're really good beans and really good street art. So I'm gonna say Rome, Italy.
Is there a cool website where you can get heirloom beans?
Oh yeah, Rancho Gordo for sure. Steve Sando has been a huge bean advocate, and just like such an amazing the work he's doing is so amazing in terms of like preserving heirloom varieties and really promoting them, and getting that sort of like telling the story of like the culture where those beans are coming from, because a lot of the beans that some of the beans he's getting now like may have been lost or may have never seen the light of day again if he hadn't gone to Mexico and worked with these growers to kind of like revive them and grow them and save their seed and preserve that variety. So just check out Rancho Gordo. They have really good beans.
I've read that, you know, Chef Sean Brock also mm-hmm. is kind of a bean fanatic, and he saves like super old school beans from his great grandmother and things like that. And
lots of field peas.
Yeah.
For sure.
It's crazy stuff. So Kill the Recipe, official drop October.
Officially October 16th.
What? Where can people buy it?
You can buy it on the website, and it'll be available on Amazon.com. And then it will be available in a few retailers around Brooklyn. For right now. So yeah, get it on the web.
Is there
direct
anywhere
to your door?
Is there anywhere you can enjoy a bean in? We didn't get to talk about that, but
there will be. There will be the cookbook release party on October 10th at Kinfolk Studios in Brooklyn, and it will be a bean in of sorts. I will have legume snacks. I won't be doing a full bean menu.
What is a bean in? What happens at a bean in? It sounds wild.
It can get kind of crazy, especially if there's broth spilling and splashing everywhere. Basically, people, you know, when I was first started doing bean ins, I just was showing up to my friend's shop in the Mission in San Francisco and making beans while people were coming to pick up their CSA boxes. So it was just like, it kind of turned into this thing where you just come to a space wherever I am and, you know, eat some free beans. And just getting people together, to eat really good beans, talk about beans, you know, talk about how I made them, talk about what kind of beans I'm making. Yeah, and it's just pretty informal.
I hate to ask this question, but do you provide beano?
No, I don't. Just because my beans are made correctly. The problem is people don't cook their beans long enough, so they don't have time for all those like starches and sugars to break down, which are the main cause of those digestive problems. I mean, you have to think about it like, I tell people to think about it kind of like barbecue or braising meat. You know, it's like you have to like cook them long enough so things start to relax and break down, and then it becomes digestible. So there's the bean and meat analogy.
It is the cowboy's answer to the bubble bath. So, you know, yeah. Fair enough. But thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you very much for having me. I'm honored to be on here.
Mark Andrew Gravel, you've heard it here first. Again, you can check out more about him and his amazing work at killtherecipe.com, as well as goodfarm.com?
Goodfarmmovement.com.
And then you also have one more, right? No?
Bowery.com, which is just my portfolio website. It's not the traditional. It's the traditional spelling in a way. It's not the current spelling. It's Bowerie.com.
Taking over the world one bean at a time.
Indeed.
Cool beans.
Right.
I had to say it. I'm sorry.
Cool beans.
Joe Galarraga, Jack Inslee, and the rest of the crew at Heritage Radio and Roberta's, thank you a million times. I'll see y'all next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today.
Thanks for listening.